Chapter 11.
Good morning, John Eric Smith.
A sultry, slightly nasally sounding woman's voice breathed into my ear. It sounded like it belonged to one of those sexy but buttoned-up secretaries that private eyes were always hiring in the old black-and-white gangster movies Saul used to show me.
Now, loading your personal, neuroactive, mechanical soft and hardware, ultra-bifocal interface, brought to you by America Online. You've got mail. It is 8:13 in the morning, and it's 72 degrees and slightly overcast.
The world in front of me lit up with a faint blue overlay, and rectangular pop-up screens started to appear before my eyes. A tiny sun icon with the number 72 printed on it popped up in the upper left corner of my view, and a window popped up in the lower right corner with a black screen full of differently colored arcing waves and numbers, like a vitals monitor. More small translucent windows popped up in my vision as my eyes flitted around each tiny detail of the scene before me.
That is a maple tree,
Miss Namshub told me as I glanced out at the tree Floppy was noshing on.
It is at least 50 years old. Maple leaves adorn the national flag of Canada.
Enough of the lecture. I turned my head and looked at the Model T.
That is a 1915 Ford Motor Company Model T,
Miss Namshub said.
License plate M0D3LT. It is registered as a historical vehicle in the state of Michigan. Owner, John Eric Smith. Vehicle identification.
Tell it to take a new profile picture, Saul said over the babble of the secretarial voice.
Take a new profile picture, I instructed Miss Namshub.
Smile wide,
Miss Namshub commanded, so I did. A picture of Saul looking haggard appeared on the screen and was immediately replaced with a picture of me looking like a grinning Wolverine in a Carhartt jacket.
Save new profile pic, I said. And turn off the informational pop-ups.
Unable to disengage informational annotations entirely without the upgrade package purchase,
Miss Namshub said.
Would you prefer to limit screen usage to vital operations only?
Yeah, that, I sighed. Please do that. All of the pop-up windows disappeared except for the one that looked like a heart monitor. Let me guess, those are my vital signs?
Your blood pressure and oxygen levels are within a normal range,
Miss Namshub said as the screen zeroed in on the vital signs monitor.
Great job. But your hydration level is only 45%, and your blood sugar is at 80 milligrams per liter. You should eat breakfast soon. How about a nice glass of United Fruit Company Banana Orange with your morning brand cereal, turkey bacon, and egg white omelet? Taste democracy with our real Guatemalan bananas. Only $10 delivered to your door within 30 minutes. Do you accept the charge?
What? I pulled the glasses off. How is this thing taking my blood sugar, Saul? It just tried to sell me banana juice.
Listen, I don't like that part either, but that's how it works here, Saul shrugged.
I guess I'll get used to it, right? I sighed, folded up the glasses, and hung them onto the collar of my shirt. Thanks, Saul. I really appreciate this.
Just don't piss anyone off.
Saul clapped me on the back, beckoned to Fila, and then headed outside.
Hey, kitty, mind if I film this big hairy fella?
Explain what you are doing, and maybe I will say yes.
Fila slung her garden weasel over her shoulder and followed Saul outside. I drank some water, snacked on some pickled walnuts, then filled the gas tank with more rubbing alcohol before we started up the Model T and started out the door. I waved to Saul, Fila, and Floppy as I steered the old car out of the cabin and toward the road, got a raised hand and a nod from the two humanoids, and directed the juddering old machine toward the dirt road. I was pretty pleased at how effective of an off-roading vehicle the tough old car was, although I didn't really want to try it out on anything less level than Saul's relatively tame property.
This'll be the first time I'll really be out among people in a world like yours, Dave,
Emma sighed. She gazed out the windows as she curled up next to me on the front seat.
Those villagers were lovely people, but I simply can't wait to see what your society is like. Do you think folks will be friendly?
I hope so, I said, as I piloted the car along the winding dirt road that led out to 9 Mile. Or maybe they'll be too wrapped up in their goggles to notice you.
Speaking of which, you ought to put those on before we get out onto the main road.
Emma pointed at the breach in the trees that led to the gray concrete of the paved road.
Do you think this will be acceptable?
Acrasis pointed to the pair of Namshubs that she had replicated on her own face. Perfect. I braked to a halt at the turnoff, slid the Namshub goggles on, and steered the car onto 9 Mile Road.
Hello again, John Eric Smith.
Miss Namshub greeted me as I turned right onto the tarmac.
Your vital signs have improved from last time. Good job. I see you're inside of a motor vehicle, so I'll switch to driving mode now. You're driving at 25 miles per hour on 9 Mile Road, which has a speed limit of 30 miles per hour. You will need to pay a toll of $20 to drive on this road, which is owned by General Motors. The full charge of $20 will be deducted from your account now.
Several more little boxes popped up around the edges of my screen. One of them showed a big red speed limit 30 miles per hour in the middle of the left side of my screen, right where a speed limit sign would have been in the real world. And under it was a slightly smaller black readout in the same font that read, "Your speed, 26 miles per hour." A green rectangular bar at the top of my vision showed the legend 9 Mile Road in white letters, along with black letters that said, "Next intersection, Grand River Avenue." Finally, the characters $999 appeared on my screen, turned into $979, and then faded away. Fucking toll roads, I protested, even as I realized I was starting to sound like Saul. And how the fuck can a company own a road? They're roads. They're for everyone. I pay fucking taxes for them.
What is going on in those, Dave?
Emma asked me.
You seem rather agitated.
Never mind. It's not even my money. I took a deep breath and concentrated on the road ahead of me as the numbers faded away again. Just enjoy the ride. We're going to be driving through almost the entire west side. 9 Mile Road took us on a gentle, winding curve through trees and a few scattered houses, just like it had in my universe. And I started to hope that the world hadn't changed much despite Saul's warnings.
Now approaching Grand River Avenue,
Miss Namshub said as the Model T approached the slanted junction of the road.
You will need to pay a discounted toll of $20 to drive on this road, which is owned by the Ford Motor Company. You just saved $5 on your toll by driving a Ford.
How is that a discount? My hand flew upward like an outraged pigeon, but I hit my knuckles on Tin Lizzie's aptly named metal roof, and it kind of ruined the effect. I glared as the numbers in my account flashed from 979 down to 959.
You received a discount, John Eric Smith, because...
Miss Namshub interjected, just to add insult to injury. Yes, yes, you said. Now shut up, I said, as I shook out my throbbing hand.
I'm sorry. I do not recognize that command,
Miss Namshub said. Sure. Sounds like selective listening to me. I rolled my eyes and decided to ignore Miss Namshub's trifling ways and focus on just getting there.
What is this selective listening you mentioned, Dave Meyer? Is your species able to receive audiological information through different orifices besides the ear appendages?
I saw Acrasis tilt her burgundy head, and her eyes flashed with that iridescent purple and green. That would be strange if you could listen through other orifices. I couldn't help but laugh.
Oh, my! Well, I do reckon that would be highly unpleasant.
Emma chortled, and when I glanced to the side, I could tell by her blush that she was thinking about the same orifices as I was, because, really, what else came to mind when someone said orifice? After Ems and I contained our inappropriate snickers, I cleared my throat and darted my eyes back to Acrasis in the rear view. To answer your very valid question, selective listening is when someone knows exactly what you mean or say, but they pretend not to understand or hear you because they don't want to engage, I explained. I definitely did that a lot whenever my adopted mom slash aunt would tell me to do things I didn't want to do, like take out the garbage and stuff. I'd pretend not to hear when she shouted from the downstairs of our house, just so I could play Sega for a few more minutes.
I did the same thing when Mama ordered me to beat the dusty rugs on the line. The dust always made me sneeze something awful, and I hated having to do it instead of reading my books. Although, I don't think I'd mind so much now.
I saw Emma smile a little sadly out from the corner of my eye when she said this, and I reached across to hold her hand. Even though she had been alone for a long time, she probably still had those little moments and memories pop up that never really lost their sting, no matter how much time passed. I could relate. Doris was my biological mother, but I don't have any memories of her because she died when I was too young to remember. However, I considered myself lucky that I had all the mom a boy needed in Miriam, Saul's sister. Emma squeezed my hand back, and her sad smile was replaced with something a bit more sunny, which was how it should always be, damn it. She was my little southern primrose, and she should be protected at all costs.
I'm not quite sure I understand, but it sounds as if this is a type of human social form of harmless deception that depends on the subtext of the situation,
Acrasis said in that unaffected voice that still somehow managed to sound curious.
I will catalog this for future reference.
You do that, babe. I winked at the inquisitive slime girl, and my heart kind of did a funny thump-thump at how endearing it was to see her try to be human. I felt like bit by bit some of her personality was starting to come to the surface, and I looked forward to seeing what would emerge at the end of this peculiar sprout when she was in full bloom. I sighed as we continued to wend our way down the road. I felt a little less agitated after talking with my girlfriends, but I will admit those numbers were starting to worry me. It seemed like every street I turned down had another toll, and we had already lost a good chunk of change only 10 minutes into our drive. We weren't even out of Farmington yet. Grand River Avenue, just south of 9 Mile Road, had always been a little on the seedy side, but it had been a wholesome kind of seedy, like the wrong side of the tracks in a Frank Capra movie. There had been a mini-golf place with only 16 holes, a pawn shop that did a brisk business in kids' bikes, an A&W drive-up that sold root beer in gallon milk jugs, a couple of appliance repair places that had always looked like fronts to me, and a little beer and a shot joint simply called the Corner Bar. Instead of the familiar old shops and cracked sidewalks, the buildings that rose on either side of the ribbon-smooth road were glittering monoliths of gridded glass and brushed steel. The cars that zipped along on either side of us were all virtually identical jelly beans in slightly different shades of soft, glittery gray, like it was the early 2000s all over again in automotive design.
Now, passing through the Farmington Financial District,
Miss Namshub said. I only asked for crucial updates, I muttered, as we sputtered along the road.
There is a traffic jam 500 yards away at the junction of the M5 freeway and Grand River Avenue,
Miss Namshub said.
It will take 6 minutes to regain normal speed. Would you like me to find a detour around the blockage?
No, we're fine, really.
You haven't given me a destination for your trip yet,
Miss Namshub purred.
It would make it much easier for me to find detours and shortcuts like that if...
Pleasure cruise. No real destination. Shut down.
Shut down capability disabled during driving mode,
Miss Namshub said. In that case, shut up, I gritted my teeth.
I do not recognize that command,
Miss Namshub said. It was possible I was just reading into things or projecting, but it sounded like Miss Namshub had a little sass factor in her Alexa bitch voice. You said that already, I snapped out as I hit the brakes, and we scudded to a stop behind a line of nearly identical cars that all looked like Fiats. I tapped my fingers on the steering wheel and observed that most of the cars had little tweaks and details here and there that made them look different, like the shape of the grille or the exact curve of the roof, but that they were all the exact same size. I was used to seeing plenty of SUVs and pickups on the road, as well as sedans, but maybe the SUV craze hadn't caught on here the same way it had in my world.
The air is not particularly sweet here,
Emma wrinkled her nose and pointed at the curls of black smoke coming from the tailpipes of the cars.
Are those coal-powered, do you think?
We had the fossil fuels talk, didn't we? I asked as the cars slowly started to move again. Dinosaurs die out and turn into oil, we turn oil into gas to burn,
And plastic to put stuff into. Smoke comes out of cars and fucks up the ozone layer. Plastic gets into the oceans and kills everything. We run out of oil. Earth turns into a barren wasteland filled with bikers in bondage gear for some reason.
How much of that actually happened in your world? I had the impression you weren't at the barren wasteland stage yet.
We're at the plastic in the ocean stage, I said.
Are dinosaurs animals?
Acrasis asked.
If so, there is a possibility that I could derive nutritive value from oil or plastic.
They were when they were alive, I said. Big fucking lizards. And if we find a world where they still have them, I'm taming and riding one. I don't care if they have feathers or not.
We are about to enter Livonia, Wayne County.
Miss Namshub informed me as I hit the brakes at a red light.
The next 2 miles of Grand River Avenue have been flagged with a high number of user-generated warnings. Would you like me to read the most relevant while we are still able to find a detour?
Do they include the words Sundown Town? I asked.
90% of them contain that search string,
Miss Namshub replied. I got the gist of it. I gunned the motor as the light turned green. Livonia looked like it hadn't changed since the early 1960s. The little prefab houses with Easter egg-colored vinyl siding and two-story courtyard motels, the white-tiled corner burger joints and gleaming silver Coney Islands, and the little brick liquor stores and hardware shops were even more of a throwback than they'd been in my world.
We are about to enter Redford Charter Township,
Miss Namshub informed me after a few minutes.
The average surrounding property values are about to decrease by 35%, so remember to lock your doors. Would you prefer to get on the freeway instead?
This car won't handle freeway speeds. I wasn't sure what to make of the property values remark, especially since the houses and shops we were passing were pretty much indistinguishable from the town we'd just left.
Noted,
Miss Namshub said.
Where are all the people?
Emma asked.
I don't see anyone strolling on the sidewalks or sitting on their porches. Or perhaps it's too early for that sort of thing. But children ought to be going to school right about now.
Most people don't really walk along this stretch of road unless they don't have a car or something, I said. And it's Detroit, the home of the automobile, so you kind of need a car to get around.
We are approaching a bridge that spans the Rouge River. This bridge is owned and maintained by the Maroon family and requires a toll of $50 to cross. This amount will be automatically deducted from your bank account.
You can't be serious, I sighed. I bet there's no detour, is there?
Not over water, Mr. Smith. The surface may be wet. Please take appropriate precautions.
The traffic bridge over this branch of the Rouge River was really just a normal stretch of road with a culvert built under it, and unless you looked out on either side into the woods, you wouldn't really have known that there was a river flowing under the road. In this world, the woods had been cut down, and the winding stream was a straight sluice with concrete banks hemmed in by a high metal fence topped with barbed wire. Huge red signs posted every few yards read, "Property of Nestle Corp," in large white letters, with the familiar bird in a nest logo stamped underneath. Okay, that's not normal, I said to Emma. That shit was never there in my world. They had signs up warning you not to drink it because it was full of duck shit, but that was all.
I wonder if that's what Mr. Meyer meant about collecting rainwater,
Emma mused.
Ask those goggles of yours about that. You've been complaining to it ever since they got on your face, so maybe it'll come in handy now.
Hey, Namshub, what's up with those signs? I asked, as we drove over the bridge. And is it legal to collect rainwater?
The state of Michigan's water needs are currently met by the Nestle Corporation. Collecting drinking water from natural water sources within the geographical state of Michigan or any of its surrounding Great Lakes, including rainwater, is considered infringement of this contract and is punishable by forcible confiscation of property, fines, or jail time, depending on the amount of water stolen.
It's definitely illegal, I sighed. I considered asking about how Flint was doing, water-wise, but decided that the answer would probably just depress me. I needed to concentrate on getting through this version of Detroit without getting pulled over or running out of money.
We are about to enter Detroit in 1/2 mile,
Miss Namshub announced.
The average surrounding property values will decrease by roughly 35%.
Is there a toll for getting into the city? I sighed.
There will be a...
Miss Namshub stopped talking as the cityscape around us changed. This part of Detroit had been Redford before it had been annexed by Detroit, and I was used to seeing things get shabbier and weirder until the road hit Telegraph. But in this universe, the change was instant. Cracks in the road and chunks of concrete made the wheels of the Model T judder and bounce. And I had to fight with the steering wheel and ease up on the speed to keep control of the vehicle in the trailer. The long, neatly clipped cemetery that took up an entire city block on the right-hand side of the road was overgrown and full of high, tall grass. The staid beige and red brick buildings that had held restaurants, auto parts shops, and the odd liquor store had been boring but well-kept in my world, with trimmed lawns and fresh coats of paint. Here, almost all of them were crumbling into half-burnt ruins, with peeling paint flaking off into the tall grass, glass windows shattered and barred, and grapevines covering the piles of charred wreckage. Even the proud old wooden churches, with the three-story spires and Roman columns at the front, had been ravaged by fire and plants. Almost every wrecked building had a high chicken wire fence around festooned with signs that said, "This property under development by," in large black letters, and then, inevitably, either Quicken Loans or Illich Holdings in even larger red letters. None of them looked like they were being worked on by anything except for termites. "This city limits crossing brought to you by Quicken Loans," announced a calm, slightly nasal male voice. "Look around you. You might see foreclosed properties and urban decay, but what we see is opportunity. Real estate in Detroit has never been cheaper. And when you take out a mortgage for a new home or business building with Quicken Loans today, you'll get a free lifetime pass for the Q Line. This electric streetcar takes you on a 3-mile round trip through downtown to see everything that's worth seeing in Detroit." "I hate getting stuck behind that thing when I'm delivering," I groaned. "It happens almost every time I try to go downtown. I'll get someone's lunch, bring it downtown, I get right behind the stupid streetcar going 10 miles an hour while the barbecue from Slow's is getting cold and my tip is shrinking by the second." Normally, even the poorer parts of Detroit had a certain raffish, do-it-yourself air that suggested a thriving community living in the cracks of the concrete like colorful flowering weeds. Storefronts and snack shacks sported bright graffiti murals and flashing, friendly neon signs. People with tents and card tables sold T-shirts and fruit by the side of the road in vacant lots, and signs advertising houses for sale or at-home hairdos littered the grassy medians. None of that life seemed to exist in this Detroit, only crumbling brick, cracked concrete, and wire fences.
"Oh, they don't have those goggles on,"
Emma pointed out the window as we drove under a freeway overpass.
"And that's the first person I've seen outside of a car for our entire journey so far."
The person Emma had indicated was wrapped in what looked like several thick coats and was sitting next to a shopping cart filled with well-worn plastic bags. They had a scarf around the lower half of their face and a fuzzy woolen hat on their head, but definitely no goggles. "Homeless person," I said. "Wish I had some cash. I don't even know if it'd be legal tender here, though."
"Homeless?"
a crisis asked.
"As in, they do not have a house?"
"Basically," I said. "I don't think that's the only homeless person we're going to see in Detroit. I've driven through, like, whole little villages under some of those freeways."
"Are they homeless because they cannot get into their houses?"
a crisis pointed at the fences. "Nobody wants to live in those," I said. "They're burnt down and all fucked up."
"Oh, I imagine quite a few of these could be repaired with a bit of muscle, wood, and spunky wherewithal. Look at what we built in just a day or so. We only had 3 of us and a woolly mammoth."
"Yeah, but these fucked-up houses all belong to someone else," I said. "Although I do know people who've just gone into houses nobody's in, started fixing it up and living there, and they just kind of homesteaded it the way that we're doing."
"So they'd rather the houses just sit decaying than have someone living in them and fixing them up?"
Emma shook her head.
"It seems so wasteful. At least when I had to sleep outdoors in my own world, it was only because there wasn't a house around for miles."
"Are we going to inspire revolution in this world like we did in the last one?"
a crisis asked.
Nope, not the plan, I said. Look, this isn't as simple as a bunch of Aztecs coming in and killing everyone. There are complex economic factors at play.
Attention,
Miss Namshub said.
You are about to enter the Grand Mont Rosedale District of Detroit. There is not enough money in your bank account to enter this area. Please find an alternate route to your destination.
What do you mean, not enough money? I asked. How much is the toll to enter?
There is no toll to enter this area. Non-residents or non-guests with a net worth of less than $100,000 are not permitted into this area. Please hook up your vehicle's autopilot so that you may be redirected.
What the fresh hell is this? You have to have a certain bank account to drive through a suburb? Oh, what, are the streets paved with solid gold? I grumbled in a crotchety voice that sounded way too much like Saul whenever he was revving up for one of his famous rants as the Namshub flashed an iconic Bluetooth logo across the goggles' GUI. With a frustrated thump of Tin Lizzie's bench seat, I torqued the wheel of the Model T to the right and headed south on P. Southfield in the direction of I-96. I was familiar with the road that ran parallel to the Southfield Freeway, but I frowned at the mysterious P in front of the name.
Thank you for driving on the Matthew Maroon Road, previously known as Maddie Maroon Memorial Road, previously known as Southfield Road. The Grandmont Rosedale Bypass is owned and maintained by the Maroon family and requires a discounted toll of $60.
Miss Namshub flashed me the characters of my bank account in a way that made me feel like she was flipping me the bird, and I ground my teeth as the numbers went from 909 down to 849. Ugh, seriously? The Maroon family again? Great, I see what's happening. The Maroons, Detroit's least trustworthy billionaires, went from buying out land and leaving massive housing developments to fall into derelict ghost towns, just like that bastard Illich, to forming a sick symbiosis with their corporate neighbors, like Fiat Chrysler and Nestle. And instead of one parasite leeching off of the people, it's a nasty Kronberg conglomeration intent on devouring the world. I tightened my hands around Lizzie's steering wheel.
Kind of like how Crasis gobbled up all of Kingdom Come back on her Earth? Oh, no offense, Razzie.
Emma turned over her shoulder so she could apologize to the slime girl.
I do not take offense from a simple fact, Emma Newbold,
Crasis said. Then she stiffly patted Emma's head, kind of like how she saw Fila pat Floppy all the time.
Also, what is a Croppelbird?
What's a Cronenberg? I repeated.
A Cronenberg is a term used to describe...
Alexa bitch chimed into my ear and I groaned. Namshub, I tried to cut in.
Hideous and mutated...
Hey, Abby! I shouted, and Miss Namshub stopped.
Would you like to customize my keyword to respond to Abby?
The AI asked in its placid yet upbeat voice. Will you be more agreeable if I give you a nickname and shut up? I shot back.
I'm sorry. I do not
understand the command. Yeah, I know, Abby. I finished for the device and rolled my eyes again.
Darling, maybe you should consider removing your spectacles before they drive your blood pressure through the roof?
Emma suggested through a smile she was trying to bank by biting her rosebud lip. It was then that I remembered only I could actually hear the Namshub because I was the only one with an actual working set of goggles, and it was probably very amusing seeing me argue with thin air. I can't take them off, Ems. I have to keep track of how much we keep getting charged by all these tolls. But maybe I can compromise. I took a deep breath, and even though Alexa bitch charged me another 75 smackers as we passed an exit which used to lead to the Rosa Parks Memorial Highway, but was now apparently owned by Starbucks, I stuffed my irritation and worry down even as the grim number of 774 flashed across the GUI. After the Namshub finished explaining how much Starbucks fucked us while also offering us a 5% discount on our next Frappuccino, I tried to address the AI a little more civilly, even though it was just an AI. Okay, Miss Namshub, let's work together, shall we? Please change your response word to Abby, I started with, because Abby was better than Alexa bitch. But the trifling hoe still didn't deserve the miss.
Okay, Just call me Abby from now on, John Eric Smith, and we will be best friends.
Abby chirruped with something that sounded a little less automated, and I wondered if maybe the AI actually just wanted to be treated like a person instead of everybody's virtual butler all the time. The idea of a technological singularity always kind of fascinated me, and I made a mental note to ask Saul about just how advanced the tech has evolved in this world. Maybe this was a universe where computers could pass the Turing test and had a modicum of self-awareness. And feelings. Aw. Well, now I felt bad about the Alexa bitch thing, but at least I only thought it and didn't say it out loud. Nice to meet you, Abby. Now, let's get along, I said, ready to make friends.
I'm ready to assist,
she said in her super helpful voice.
Tell me how I may be of service.
I need you to please get us to 28590 Edmund Place in Brush Park in a way that won't strand us without any money. Can you do that, Abby? My eyebrows furrowed as we flew by another toll checkpoint, and the numbers flashed an alarming $100 deduction that brought us down to 674. The tolls were steadily increasing the longer we stayed on the bypass, but I figured as long as we could at least get there, I could then form a plan to get back.
If you reroute via the Dow DuPont Bypass, previously known as John C. Lodge Service Road, then you will save $120 on the next toll checkpoint. But it is not recommended due to the total crime rate being 282% higher than the national crime average.
Abby then overlaid a semi-transparent demographic that showed a series of bar graphs growing from the approaching suburb to my left. At a glance, the graph seemed to compare violent crime and property crime against the national averages for both.
But never fear, because Crown Enterprises only provides the most affordable homes in the safest neighborhoods. You can count on it.
What is Crown Enterprises? I asked, as I followed the glowing blue path Abby highlighted for me across the goggles GUI. The semi-transparent overlay was telling me to exit left toward the detour the Namshub device calculated for us.
The Maroon family,
the AI started. Oh, God, not these schmucks again. Never mind. I don't want to know. But can you please just quit with all the aggro advertising? I asked.
I'm sorry, but my programming automatically has these features installed, and they cannot be removed,
the Namshub said. I took a deep breath again and mentally took back any harsh judgment I ever had on technophobes or older people refusing to embrace the future because the exasperation I felt with having to deal with the AB made me feel 20 going on 60. All that was missing was a lawn, a shotgun, and punk kids to scare away, and I would have my crusty old man starter pack ready to go. Abby, can you mute the ads? I tried, thinking about how I used to handle this pesky situation on YouTube.
All alerts muted. Only traffic alerts are on,
Abby said, as if it was just that easy, and I thought maybe the AI really was sentient on some level.
Why is Dave Meyer attempting to reason with artificial intelligence?
Acrasis asked.
Well, I'd imagine he's trying to make the thing stop arguing with him,
Emma said, still with that amused little grin hovering in the corners of her mouth.
After all, my mama always told me you are sure to catch more flies with honey than with vinegar.
Why would one want to catch flies?
The slime girl's eyes shimmered again like curious soap bubbles as she tilted her head adorably the other way.
I assumed they were considered a pestilence to humans because many of them tried to kill us. Me, with insect repellents.
It's just a saying that means sometimes you get a better result if you ease the way with a little graciousness and kindness,
the black-haired beauty said as she reached back and patted a crasis on the back of the hand before she faced forward again.
I will also catalog this as well, Emma Newbold, but Dave Meyer never finished answering my questions about the Croppelbrid.
A crasis blinked her owl-like eyes. Oh, Cronenberg? I chuckled and shook my head. Okay, how do I explain this to someone who's never seen Rick and Morty? I then tried to explain how a Cronenberg was a mishmash of parts that formed an abomination of grotesque and overblown proportions, much like the cancerous corporation conglomerate that was actually swallowing up Michigan like the Blob.
I remember the local butcher back before we migrated north had an awfully large honker on his face. So maybe I could say he had a Cronenberg nose?
Emma asked, and I couldn't help but snort. Kind of, I said.
Was his schnoz also hairy or pimply or growing some purple fungus or something? Because that would definitely make it more Cronenberg.
No hairs or pimples, but I do remember one summer when the poor man's proboscis burnt terribly out in the sun and started to peel in large, flaky patches when it healed. In fact, just thinking about it makes my stomach turn over.
Emma laid a palm against her stomach, and I side-eyed her as her complexion turned faintly green. Maybe we should change the subject, I suggested, and I wished for the dozenth time that the Model T had a radio that could play Rage Against the Machine.
I have another question, Dave,
Acrasis said. Hit me with your best shot and fire away, I sing-songed.
What is the meaning of this gesture?
The slime woman asked, and I looked at the rearview mirror just in time to see Acrasis open and close one eye slowly in a possessed Annabelle creepy sort of way, as if she was one of those freaky dolls that was supposed to close its eyes when someone laid them down, but only one was working. It was so at odds on her pretty face that I couldn't help but crack up at the sight until Emma joined in, and the two of us were guffawing like dying yaks as I attempted to prevent us from crashing. Then, Ems and I tried to explain the human nuance of winking to the alien slime girl for the next 20 minutes, as Abby silently but helpfully navigated us on an ever-winding detour around random pockets of Ritz, Glitz, and Lux interspersed between dilapidated housing developments and abandoned strip malls. Michigan never really had delineated sectors between wealth and poverty. But it was still easy to spot the haves from the have-nots, like little rainbow sprinkles on a shit cupcake. But the way this corporate Detroit sprawled out like a grasping and greedy glutton was somehow more alien to me than that strange Cambrian desert nostalgia trip with its dildo cacti and all of God's rough drafts.
Your destination is on the right,
Abby said as we finally turned the last corner where the historic Brush Park mansions were located.
You have a balance of $119 remaining in your account. Thank you for choosing America Online.
Yeah, yeah, I said as I parked directly across the street where a dusty lot served as a parking area for more of those jellybean Fiats that seemed to infest the streets. Even though Abby was good on her word that she would be able to save us a pinch, I knew I was going to have to figure out how to get more spoof currency or something in order to get us all back. But all that could wait, because Magpie Mansion stood proudly on Edmund Place, just like I remembered it. Well, almost.